everyone, and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, June 8th, 2009. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, as the information superhighway becomes more crowded, independent and small business owners must be that much more focused in order to avoid getting stuck in the traffic jam. This means we must constantly be on the lookout for fun and innovative ways to attract new customers and to create long-lasting relationships with them. This is the only way to set up a business for long-term success. Today's guest says that there are some systems we can use to do that, and he's here to share some of them with us today. His name is Michael Port, and he's the author of several books, including The Think Big Manifesto, Book Yourself Solid, and Beyond Book Solid. Each book is designed to empower you to discover and set your business foundation, build trust with your target audience, and earn credibility in your marketplace. And we know how important all of those things are to the success of our businesses. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If you're listening to the show at IndieBusinessRadio.com, we're so excited to have you here. But, you know, if you want to join the live chat, all you need to go to IndieBeauty.com and hover over Community and click on Radio Show, and you'll be welcomed into our live chat community where we're talking about what our guest is sharing and also posing questions and sharing information and tips with each other. You can also Twitter the show by following the instructions at the top of the page at the Indie Beauty site, and feel free to share Michael's insights and tips with your Twitter family throughout the show using the hashtag Indie Radio. Well, Michael, you know, you've got a lot going on. These books are great. The one that I'm looking at that your publicist sent me is Beyond Book Solid. So I know you have a lot of things to offer. I want to focus on this book, though, because no matter what kind of business you have, the idea is always to continually stream in new customers and develop those kinds of relationships. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But first, I want to ask you, with all the business books out there available today, Michael, tell me a little bit about what makes yours different.
That's a good question. When I first started writing business books, I wanted to write from a different perspective, mainly because, you know, I never felt like I related or resonated with the typical business books. I thought there had to be something much more emotional about, A, why we do what we do as business owners, and B, why people respond or do not respond to us as potential customers or clients. And so I wanted to look at marketing and sales and business development from the perspective of serving others. Because I think that if you are an entrepreneur, I think that you should stand in the service of others as you stand in the service of your own destiny.
So service is a big part of that. And, you know, one of the things that your books talk a lot about is innovation when it comes to serving other people. Can you tell us what you mean when you say innovation and why is it important?
Sure. Well, innovation obviously is important because if you innovate, you are doing something that may be new or different, but most importantly and most specifically creates additional value for the people that you are serving. And again, there comes the you know, that operative word, serving, again. But innovation can be something as simple as naming something, changing the name of something, or it could be an entire reconfiguration of a business model. And well, when you look at a business that has the potential to go beyond booked solid, then you're looking at a business that certainly is scalable, meaning it can grow larger without incurring exponentially larger costs. It's leverageable. It can grow larger without adding exponentially larger numbers of people to run it. It can grow more profitable as it increases in size, so you really benefit from economies of scale. And also, as it grows larger, can continue to be remarkable. And I love the word remarkable, the way that Seth Godin defines it in his book, The Purple Cow. Remarkable is when other people are able to remark on your products and services. because ultimately, in this day and age, in the age of permission-based marketing, people are going to flock to you if others are talking about you. You cannot buy attention in the way that one could 20 years ago, and certainly for the small business owner, and absolutely for the solo business owner, you don't have the resources to buy attention. So your attention is going to come from others being able to talk about you, because what you're doing is innovative. What you're doing is unique. And so innovation is absolutely a cornerstone of how we should be approaching the building of our business.
Okay, so let's ask this too. Innovation being so key, Michael, do you find that startup business owners really struggle in this area because it's so difficult today to start a business doing something that is truly new? In other words, you're entering the marketplace these days already offering a product or service that somebody out there is already offering. So how do you take that fact and take it to the next level and be innovative with your product or service if you're not the only one offering it?
Good question. Here's what great leaders know. Great leaders know that, or great leaders have the ability to hold contradictory ideas in their head at the same time and still be able to function. So, for example, on one hand, starting a business based on an idea that has never been realized in the marketplace is a very dangerous proposition. You know, the people come, oh, I've got this good business idea. I want, you know, give me money for it. Nobody's ever done anything like this before. Well, probably because, you know, it doesn't work or there isn't a need in the marketplace.
Right.
But on the other hand, creating something that is common or is understood to be the norm in the marketplace, it offers challenges because there are lots of people doing that. But it's actually what your customer needs. So bear with me for a second here. If you're creating a business that is so drastically different, so dramatically different that your potential customer doesn't know what to make of it, then they ignore it because it makes them nervous. It makes them uncomfortable.
Okay.
Anyway, like let's say you've been water skiing before, or you've never been water skiing, but you've seen it done a lot. Well, you go to this, you know, place where they do water skiing, and the thing that they want you to ski on is so different than any water ski that you've ever seen in any movie or TV show or, you know, when you've been at the lake, that it just freaks you out and you're not willing to do it. You go, I've never seen a water ski like that. That does not make any sense. I'm totally freaked out because I've never seen that before. You're not going to do it. So, you know, you have this important issue that you need to appear similar to what someone expects you will appear like.
So you're saying that there's an inherent danger in being innovative if innovation means that you're introducing something to the marketplace that is totally first time, never been seen or heard of before.
Exactly. There's a very great danger in doing that. But if you can find one way to be remarkable, one specific thing about your business to hang your hat on that is dramatically different than the rest of the marketplace, then people may talk about you. They'll understand, oh, this person is a financial planner. But let me tell you why they're so great or so cool or so different. So this is why when I go give a speech at a conference that is made up of high-level CEOs from around the world, I generally wear a suit. I don't show up in ripped-up jeans and a T-shirt because it makes them uncomfortable. Wait a minute, what's this guy all about?
Right.
I show up in a way that they think the speaker's supposed to show up. Then I can be different in the way that I present. So you don't, you know, if you just take everything and make it so different, it just confuses people. Then you're like a teenager who is rebelling,
mm-hmm.
and that makes people uncomfortable. So what is the one thing that you would hang your hat on that makes you distinct or unique or special or different?
So let's take many of my listeners as you know, are in the bath and body care products industry. They manufacture cosmetics, which, of course, is a multi-billion dollar business.
Yep.
There are so many different kinds of bath and body care products. I'm sure you have several of them yourself, and you know friends who have many, and there are just so many options. So just to kind of narrow down what you're saying for people who may be in this position, introducing or starting a new bath and body care products company, you're saying that there is a lot of room to be similar to what everyone else is offering if, in fact, you have that one thing that separates you from everybody else.
That's right. And how clear and specific can you be with respect to that one thing? And can you articulate it so that the customer goes, oh, wow, of course.
So that means innovation has to start with obviously targeting the right customer, but first of all, making them feel comfortable.
Absolutely.
And then you can add on your particular bells and whistles in ways that continue that comfort level but kind of dazzle them a little bit.
Absolutely. If you just try to be different for different sake, you're usually going to be irrelevant.
You know, and isn't it true, too, Michael, that people kind of see through that? It's like, oh, they're just saying that because it sounds good.
Of course. Absolutely. I mean, you know, just take shampoo for a second. I mean, what color? Oh, let's take hair conditioner, right? What color is hair conditioner generally?
Hair conditioner, like white, creamy kind of color?
Yeah, generally it's like a white, creamy color. Well, why isn't it pink? I mean, why isn't it pink?
Because nobody else's is pink?
It may freak people out. Why? Is that going to make my hair pink? Because I'm going to leave it in for like 10 minutes.
Okay, so, you know, I was in the grocery store the other day buying some applesauce for my kids, and you know they have like green applesauce now, and they
Sure.
So what's the deal with that? Can those companies do that because I'm already comfortable with their brand?
You're comfortable with applesauce, and you're probably very comfortable with their brand. Now, does that mean that those products are going to work? I don't know. Probably not. They're probably never going to replace the actual applesauce. What they're trying to do, that kind of company, is just get some attention. And what will likely happen is, you know, maybe you'll buy one thing of the, you know, pink stuff, and if the kid likes it, you'll buy more of it. But you may end up just buying more of the actual applesauce, the original applesauce. You hadn't been buying for a while. You kind of, you know, forgot about it. Now all of a sudden, oh, look, there's some green, there's some pink. Let me go check that out. Oh, you know what? I don't want to buy green applesauce. That's ridiculous. But let me just get some applesauce. We haven't had it in a while.
Right.
So sometimes, you know, large companies will develop products specifically just to get some attention, not expecting that product to sell. They don't hang their revenue model on that product, but it's almost like a marketing and initiative to remind people of the actual standard product.
So, and, you know, this is really resonating with some people in the chat room because I just got a comment that says it's really nice to know that I don't have to create something totally new. I can put a new spin on something that's already done. So,
yeah, I mean, can I give you an example in the internet world?
Please.
Okay. So, have you heard of a little company called Google?
Yes.
Okay. So, there's this little company called Google, and Google is really just a library, if you think about it. I mean, it's just a place where information is kept, and they have a system for indexing it all and delivering specific results to you based on what you search for.
Okay.
But libraries existed for many, many years, yes?
Yes.
So here, these folks at Google, they took this very, this idea that had been around for a long time, which was absolutely needed and used by most people in the world, okay? And they took a new piece of technology and reconfigured the idea of a library and turned it into something called Google based on this new technology. They just changed one thing. The one thing was, we're going to put all of this information on a computer in the, you know, wherever it is, and you'll be able to access it from anywhere in the world. That was the one thing. Everything else is the same. I mean, it's just information indexed, and then, of course, on from there, all these new worlds started spinning off, you know, and they started making and creating and creating and creating and creating. So that one innovation led to all sorts of things. So you don't have to, they didn't start it from scratch, It's not like they made up the idea of a place where information is kept. Mm-hmm. Or even Amazon, for that matter. Amazon is a bookstore,
right?
But it is a virtual bookstore. Now, of course, it's so much more than a bookstore now, but when it was first started, it was a bookstore in the sky, you know, on this thing called the Internet. They didn't make up the idea of a bookstore. They just took some technology and added it to a bookstore, and now they created a whole new world, and then on from there they kept creating and creating and creating. So what a lot of entrepreneurs do is they will reconfigure what already exists to turn it into something more valuable. Now, here's where the value part is so important as it relates to innovation. Microsoft is now coming out with something called Bing. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Okay, they're advertising all over the place. They're putting millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars into advertising this particular search engine, which nobody wants because Google's not broken.
Right. Google already works. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Google already works. So they're trying to compete on the same stage just by throwing more money at it. Well, I have not heard anything in the, you know, in the sort of in the chat rooms and the, you know, the world of people who talk about this stuff, you know, I have not heard people walking around saying, God, I really wish there was another Google. I mean,
right.
It would just be so great. Nobody's saying that, number one. I mean, maybe some, like, hardcore techies who, you know, but the general population. And then number two, I haven't heard thing one about why Bing is a place that I should go to instead of Google. Now, for example,
Let me just interject. A really good point. I've seen the commercials, and they don't make that clear either. We do have to take our first break, Michael. This information about innovation is priceless. We're going to come back and pick your brain some more about it. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We're here this afternoon with author Michael Port. He has written Beyond Book Solid and the Think Big Manifesto and other books to help us be successful. And before we took our first break, we were talking about innovation, and Michael shared some great tips. I hope you were able to catch all those, and someone in the chat room kind of summarized it this way. You can reinvent the wheel and still be successful if, as Michael says, you have that one thing that separates you from everyone else. So, Michael, let's move on. We've got that one thing in place. We have our target audience down, and we are ready to go. One of the things your books talk about is some building blocks for business, and that is that once you have your business, you have these different kinds of directions you can go in terms of systematizing things. I want to talk a little bit about each one, and just so you know, we're kind of starting on page 27 of your Beyond Book Solid book. Let's talk first for a second about franchising and what that is. I see a lot more small business owners looking to franchising these days.
Well, sure. You know, franchising, if you take all the franchise, the revenue from all franchising in the U.S. alone, it would be about the size of the seventh largest economy in the world. So franchising is a significant part of our small business economy.
What do you mean by franchising? What is that exactly for people who may not know?
Well, essentially, when you franchise, you're taking your business, essentially putting it into a box, and selling that franchise to somebody else who will be an independent operator of that business, but they will buy that initial franchise from you. They will probably be required to buy certain kinds and certain amounts of product from you, materials from you, and then you receive a percentage of revenues on into the future. I mean, the most well-known franchise business in America is probably McDonald's.
So you essentially take your business and create a system that makes it easy for other people to duplicate it and make a profit.
Exactly. And you are really partnering with them for the life of the business. And so the success of the person you sell a franchise to is directly tied into your success.
Right. Okay. And I know franchising requires a lot of legal compliance things that we can't get into on the show, but I did want to ask you that question because one of the things your books point out is that duplicity is something that makes it repeatable over and over again, millions of times over, and so it can be a win-win situation for everyone. If you want to bite off that bite from that apple and comply with the regulations that are required. And
let me add in one important point. When you're looking at different models that you can use to grow the business in the way that we talked about earlier, so that it's scalable, it's leverageable, it's profitable, and still remarkable, you need to make sure that you actually want to be in that business. Because when you move into a new model for a business, you may, in effect, be going into a new business. For example, I have a friend named Brian Scudamore who is the founder of 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Are you familiar with this company?
Yeah.
Yeah, so a very, very large company, you know, over $100 million in revenue. And they're all over North America. Now, he started this as, you know, a college kid trying to make some money to pay for school. And within a, you know, short period of time, he was doing very, very well. And he said, well, how do I want to grow this? And he looked at all these different models. He said, do I just want to do the sort of corporate growth, the way that Starbucks has done it? There's a couple little franchises, but that's not their model. They really are corporate growth. They own all their locations, and they build them and then close them down when they don't do very well. Or do I want to franchise, or do I want to, you know, sell licenses to this idea? What do I want to do here? And he decided he wanted to go and use the franchise model because it's the most appropriate for his type of business, but also, most importantly, he loved the whole concept. Because when he went into the franchise business, he was no longer in the junk business. Now, you'd say, well, that's great because who wants to be in the junk business? But it's an important point to make regardless of whether you're talking about junk or you're talking about conditioner, body products. If you move from, you know, the person who just sells the product yourself, produces it, manufactures it, sells it, or, you know, someone else sells it, whatever you do, if you're just wholesaling, whatever you're doing now, if you move from that model into a different model, you're essentially in a different business. He has to now become a master of the franchise business. And that's what he did, and that's why he's been so successful. So the people who buy the franchise are now in the junk business.
Right.
He's in the franchise business.
Right. It's interesting that you say that, too. I've heard it said that McDonald's is not in the food service business. It's in the real estate business.
Well, that's something else entirely. That's not necessarily because they are a franchise, but there's actually a great book called Behind the Golden Arches. It's the whole story of McDonald's, and if you're interested in how a business develops, it's actually a really pretty exciting read. And I'm not like a dorky business owner reader. I get bored with, you know, typical business books. But the reason that it's often said they're in the real estate business because early on what they did was basically, in the early days, banks wouldn't loan money to people who were in the franchise business because it wasn't a very, you know, well-known model or reputable model. But they would lend money to people in the real estate business. So what they did is they said, okay, well, let's, you know, buy up all this land and we'll build, you know, our locations on our own land, and then we'll lease that land to the franchise owner, the person who buys the franchise from us. So we'll be making money on the land. We'll do it at fair market value, of course. will also be making money on the actual sale of the franchise and the profits of the actual location, the restaurant location. So these large investment banks were willing to lend them a lot of money to build out, to buy all this land, because that was a worthwhile investment for them. So that's why it's often said that McDonald's is in the real estate business, because that was a significant part of their model for the development of the business.
Well, let's talk a little bit about licensing. I know we hear about licensing in a lot of different ways. Can you share like a succinct definition of that when it comes to products?
Yeah, sure. The thing is, I can't really give you a succinct definition, because there are lots of different ways to license, depending on whether it's intellectual property or some other type of physical property. But essentially, you can license the right to sell a particular product from someone who owns the, you know, who owns that license. Or you can sell the license to someone else of the product that you own, and then they can go ahead and sell it. So you're essentially licensing a name, a reputation, you know, and the product itself. And this is obviously very, very popular in the health and body industry.
And I want all my listeners out there who are in the cosmetics business to know that you may think that this may not ever happen to you, but there are a couple of people that I've been working with who are members of the Indie Beauty Network, who have been approached by people who don't want to manufacture on their own. They don't want to deal with all the branding stuff. They want to take another person's brand and pay them a certain amount of money annually to use that brand name on some products. So that's kind of what you're describing. You have to get to know, you already know your manufacturing processes, but Michael, you also, if you're interested in licensing, need to kind of understand how that works too. But that's an interesting thing to point out, because I want my listeners to be ready, if someone ever asks them that question, to have a little bit of an idea of what it is that's being posed.
And what you're talking about here is essentially continuing education.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of these different models, and we're obviously not going to have time on this, you know, call to get into, or this interview, radio interview, to get into every single different type of model that, you know, could be applicable to your industry, of course. But just if you look at franchising or look at licensing, just those two things, it's a very good idea as you are working on your business, and that is always, to be reading about these types of business models to see what does or does not apply to your business and the way that you want to run your business and the way that you want to live your life.
Good point.
So, you know, you go pick up a good book on licensing in your industry. You know, I'm sure you've got lots of resources for them. You know, or you read about franchising. You know, one of the ways that I do it is I read the dummies books.
Mm-hmm.
Because the dummies books give such, you know, foundational, fundamental ways at, for understanding these types of things. And then at least you know what you're dealing with, so that when these conversations do come up, you know what to talk about, and also you know how to think about your future, because it's so important for us to think about our future, instead of living just in this very little moment and not thinking about where we're going with the business.
Oh, good. Such awesome points, and I'm so glad that you mentioned those things, because we do want to be ready for opportunities, and if somebody does come along talking about these things, we want to have a context for them.
Absolutely. One quick example that I think is very important as it relates to this particular topic is the lifestyle question.
Okay, let's talk lifestyle then.
Because there are a lot of different opportunities that you can create or may be awarded when you do good work. And so, you know, this idea of licensing or franchising or whatever it is, you always have to relate it back to what kind of lifestyle do you want. So, for example, I have two friends who own a lavender farm in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. It's a beautiful lavender farm. It's called Peace Valley Lavender Farm. And they make lavender products, soaps and shampoos and all sorts of different things. Now, they buy a lot of the lavender and bring it in because they only have 4 acres to produce lavender, and they obviously need more than that to make their products. So they have this cute little country shop that people come from all over to come into because they want the experience and they want to tour the farm and, you know, feel what it's like to be in a real country little store like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to them about, you know, opportunities that they have. And one of the things we were talking about, I said, you know, they have such a high-end product, and they don't sell it at the price point that I think they can sell it at, frankly. And, you know, they're near New York City and Philadelphia, and there's all these incredibly high-end department stores and boutique stores that would sell their products at significant markups and would even, as we were talking about before, private label it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But and we were looking at the different models and the revenue and all these different things, and they just sort of said, like, but we just don't want to be dealing with those businesses.
Right, right.
This is not what we want to do with our days, you know?
Right, right. So
we don't want to be in a manufacturing business for somebody else to private label it. We kind of like what we're doing here, you know? We just want to see if we can be a little bit more profitable with respect to what we're doing. So they knew what kind of lifestyle they wanted to lead, what was important, and how different ideas for generating revenue would or would not fit into the lifestyle that they want to live.
Important question to think about, that lifestyle. We're talking with Michael Port, author of several books, including Beyond Booked Solid. Michael, your book talks, too, about social networking and how that fits into your business building block. Can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, typically when we think about social networking, we just think about it from a marketing perspective. Okay? So, you know, how can I use social networks to meet more people and do more business? But there's also the business model side of it. Now, I'm not sure how you apply this to, you know, your particular industry, but I have a feeling that what you've done with your business is a social network model of a business. You've created an environment that people want to buy into because of all the value that they get for being part of this social network.
It's like a community.
It's exactly like a community. And so when you have a niche-type business, you may be able to create these specialized communities that people buy into. Associations are like this. Even a labor organization is a social, you know, community that people are paying into, right? And so it's just one of the many different models that can be used if you have information to share. Now, it's not as used as much with product, but it is used with information. So, you know, an association is a perfect example. An association may serve people in product-based businesses, but they are creating a context for these people who have product-based businesses to come together to share information, to learn from each other, to learn from the association, et cetera, et cetera.
So we're going to take another break. We're going to take our last break. And when we come back, Michael, I want to ask you about connecting that social networking model that you just talked about, using social networking to create communities around your products and services, connect that to how it helps you bring in new customers and develop those relationships that are talked about in your book, Beyond Book Solid. We'll be right back. This is Donna Maria on Indie Business Radio. Don't touch that mouse. I'll see you in a minute.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Back to Indie Business Radio. I'm here with my guest this afternoon. His name is Michael Port. He's the author of the Think Big Manifesto and other books to help you be successful. And before we took our last break, Michael hit on a nerve that all of us as small business owners are really keen on learning more about, and that is how we can use social networking to create the kind of communities that we need to keep our brand strong and to, as the title of Michael's book says, book ourselves solid and make sure that we are always targeting our products and services to the people that will purchase them. So, Michael, let's talk about that community aspect, because you mentioned that, you know, I've started a community and it's a trade organization, and yes, that's true, but you don't have to start a trade organization to create a community that delivers for you in similar ways, do you?
No, absolutely not. You know, in your case, you're basing your business model on it.
Right, but it's different.
So it's different. So, but for the people that are listening now, most of them want to create communities that are completely free, have no barrier for entry, but are based around a strong value system or topic or desire that their customers share, and not just their customers, but maybe also their marketing partners, because what we don't pay enough attention to is the fact that the more people that we have to market with, to help us market, we market for them, the more collaborative relationships we have developed, the more success we're going to have. So you've got these two different groups of people. You've got people who are potential clients, customers, who might also be great marketing partners, but that's for them to decide. You don't tell them to go do that, right? But then there are other people who might share the same target market but offer different products or services, so they're complementary. And those are great marketing partners, so you can talk about what they have to offer, they can talk about what you have to offer, so on and so forth. So can you build communities, tribes of these people who want to gather around and they've got something to say about this topic or this issue? And so you've got blogging, you've got Twitter, you've got Facebook, you know, for the young kids, you know, even more around music, though, specifically, but for the younger kids, you've got MySpace, you know, and then, of course, you can create your own network. So, for example, I had a new book come out recently called The Think Big Manifesto, and
right.
I'm very, very fortunate that it became a New York Times bestseller. And one of the reasons that it was so successful was because of ThinkBigRevolution.com. I created a social networking site for free. It didn't cost me anything to create it, and it doesn't cost anything for the people who come. The only thing it costs me is my time, my effort, but that is an absolutely worthwhile investment. And it's a place where people can come to think big about who they are and what they offer the world, and they can start their own revolution. And all the tools are there to be revolutionary, so they can write, they can put up videos, they can put up audios, they can put their events there, they can start discussion forums, they have their own revolution page. And there are thousands of members of the Think Big Revolution. And because of that, these people are out in the world talking about thinking bigger. They're recommending the book. They're inviting others to be part of this tribe, this movement of big thinkers. So can you create some sort of environment, be it a blog or a social network or, you know, a page on Facebook or, you know, a whole Twitter profile or maybe, you know, a number of these in conjunction that is centered around a particular idea that will attract the kind of people you want to serve so that they are in that environment adding value to it. You create the space and then they come and they make it what they want it to be.
And you can use spaces like that at a social networking site. You can use your blog. That's another great one to use, right?
Absolutely. Your blog, though, is a little different than, say, you know, something like if you create a social network at a place called Ning, N-I-N-G, and you can create a social network for free there pretty easily. Sometimes easier than a blog. A blog is very, very good. It's very good if you like to write a lot and are very good at it. But people can comment on what you're posting, and certainly they can also write on their own blogs about what you're posting and maybe, you know, track back to it. It's a great thing. However, it is still content generated by you. Not as much content is generated by your readers on a blog. They might comment on what you are posting, but it's still generally run by you, and there isn't anything else they can really do there except comment on what you have to say. But in a social networking environment, they can create their own page. They can put up their own events. They can put up pictures and videos, and they can write, and they can discuss with each other in the forums. And once you've got that kind of activity going on, it lives without you. You know, this environment is built by the people in the environment,
not just by you.
It
sounds so easy. Why do you think more people aren't doing that? I see authors like you doing it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's not as common an idea. It's sort of still a nuke for many people. You know, being very, very socially engaged on the web is still new. So that's one part of it. Number two, yes, it is easy to create the initial environment. But it's not the easiest thing in the world to grow it. You've got to really, everywhere you go, you've got to invite people. You've got to bring them in. And you've got to get them talking. You get them engaged. But once they are engaged, then your results are compound. It's sort of like when you put money in the stock market, when the stock market's doing well. The more money you have there, the more money you make.
So if you make fast body care products, let's take your lavender piece from, just for an example. They obviously make lavender products or products with lavender in them, so they're health-based, maybe herbal. So, extend that example. What might, or do they have a site like that? Or
No, they don't. They don't. And it's a great example, because from what I understand, from what they've told me, is that there are people all over the country, in the world for that matter, who are obsessed with lavender products.
Yes, that's true.
Obsessed. And they study it. They know all about it. I mean, somebody even sent me, I'm going bald on the top of my head, they sent me lavender shampoo that was supposed to grow my hair back. And I went and told them, and I'm like, is this true? They're like, I don't know about that one, but there is some talk, you know. So basically, they can create a social environment that is all lavender all the time. Like, that would be a good domain name, alllavenderallthetime.com. And they can write about lavender in there. They can post pictures of the farm. They can do videos of the harvesting process or how they create their soaps or whatever it is. So you get this behind-the-scenes look. And then all of their customers can, you know, get their own profile there, and they can write about their experiences with lavender. And their customers will then talk about what they know, because people love to influence others. They love to teach. They love to be in a leadership position. And then others from around the world will have access to this, can come in and join for free, even if they've never bought anything from, you know, Peace Valley Lavender. And they, you know, might create something. So the reason I say that a lot of people start it, but they don't follow it through, because people are great, generally good starters, but not good finishers. So initially it takes some time to build it up. But once you've got it built up, there are things going on there all the time, and you're getting results without having to do that much anymore.
So
people in there are doing
it. One person in the chat room just said it's kind of daunting to think about that. Let me ask you this. Is this somewhat of an example of what you talked about earlier on, and that is that if you do something like this in order to maintain it, you kind of have to learn a new, not a new business, but kind of a new way of doing business?
That's right. Absolutely.
So is that why, for some people, it's a good idea, for some people it's not, but
yes,
you should learn about it so you can know whether it's up your alley and your lifestyle idea or not.
Absolutely. And my suggestion would be, before you assume it's daunting, learn about it.
Yeah, and see, that's what you said earlier, that even if you think it may not interest you, you owe it to yourself and your business to learn about these things so that you can then make an informed decision about turning the idea down or not.
That's right. I mean, look, my first three books were about business. The first book was marketing, Book Yourself Solid. The second book, Beyond Book Solid, was about business growth and innovation. The third book, The Contrarian Effect, is about why it pays big to take typical sales advice and do the opposite. But my most recent book, The Think Big Manifesto, is about thinking bigger about who you are and what you offer the world. And the reason I wrote this at this point was because after all these business books, I realized it's not the information that's so important at the end of the day. The most important thing is our belief in our capacity for doing big things, so that you don't automatically look at a new task of, say, building a social environment, social network, as daunting. Now, it might create some anxiety, but discomfort is okay. And big thinkers will allow themselves to be comfortable with discomfort. And so if the Think Big Manifesto, or if any of this work can encourage you just to think bigger about what you're capable of, well, then we can open up whole new worlds.
So that's interesting that you say that, and we haven't talked a lot about the Think Big Manifesto, so I'm glad that you brought that up. I encourage everyone to go to the thinkbigmanifesto.com and check that site out. But you're saying that, you know, kind of to wrap things up here, that we sort of sell ourselves short, generally speaking, when it comes to what we're capable of in our businesses.
Well, I think so. I think that the three most dangerous words in combination are, I know that.
Okay.
Because I know that can keep you playing small. You could say, I know that that's not for me. I know that that's too daunting. I know that I'm not going to be able to understand that. That is a very, very dangerous phrase of words. But I don't know, but I'm willing to learn is a much more exciting proposition. So, I don't, you know, what did I know about social networks when I started? No more than you, and I'm not smarter than you are. But what I do have, and this comes from experience in part, and also just comes from some, you know, delusional, I don't know, way that I, maybe it's because my parents were psychiatrists, I don't know. But just this idea that if it's out there, it's possible for you, period. If there's a social network out there that can be built, it can be built by you if you're interested and if it's, you know, valuable to the people that you serve. But you cannot say no until you've learned about it, because big thinking always says yes. Small thinking always says no. And our future relies on big thinking. Small thoughts perpetuate the past, and big thinking is the future.
Small thoughts perpetuate the past. That's a really good and succinct way to boil it down. So for anyone who's out there listening, we have one person in the chat room saying, I don't know where to start. And you know what? Here's a place to start. Go to Ning.com and read the frequently asked questions. How's that?
Great idea.
And I always talk with people about that. I'm like, well, you know, whatever you want to do, if it requires another website to do it, go to that website and see if they have a fact.
Yep. You know, seriously, I mean, it's, you know, that doesn't change. I don't know the person's name who said that, but that doesn't change. I mean, I want to reconfigure my business once again because I see another way to do it. And, you know, I'm sort of like, my God, it's a lot of work, and, you know, I don't know, I haven't done like that. What if it doesn't work? You know, all those questions come up. But those are good questions to ask. So I don't know exactly how to do it or what technology I need. So all I'm doing is spending 20 minutes a day online searching, reading about things. Well, what is that? Does that make any sense? Could I use that? Has anyone ever done anything like I'm thinking about doing? And if they have, let me go read the material. So just 20 minutes a day, that's where I start. 20 minutes a day, you go out and you play, and you just see what you can learn. You take in what you think is relevant, and you pass by what you think is irrelevant.
Right. You separate the wheat from the chaff. That's good advice. Take 20 minutes a day to play and learn. I love that, Michael. Thank you for sharing that. And I wish we had more time to pick your brain some more, but we only have this time, and I'm so glad you were here with us today. Michael, tell us where we should go to get more of you, buy your books, and maybe even come and hear you speak sometime.
Well, michaelport.com is a portal, no pun intended, is a portal for all of the different things that I offer. And you can go there and you can get free chapters from my first three books. You can just download free chapters right from there.
Oh, great.
Certainly, thinkbigrevolution.com is a great place to go. And Booked Solid Network is a free social network for small business owners that you can check out as well.
Excellent. So you can all go there. And again, you can contribute to the community in substantive ways, right, Michael, while you're also sharing what it is that you have to offer.
That's right.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Again, everyone, check out michaelport.com. It is a great homepage there that links you out to whatever it is that interests you based on our show today. Michael, thank you for joining us, and thank you for joining us in the chat room and listening at indiebusinessradio.com. Next week, Monday, June the 15th, we have Gerald Sindel, the author of The Genius Machine. He'll be our guest. He says that the power to find smarter solutions to our business challenges is within all of us, and he's going to join us to share how we can tap into that power and put it to work in our daily lives to make our personal lives and our business lives even more successful. I'm so glad that you all joined today, and you know what? Guess what? At IndieBusinessRadio.com, there are hundreds of shows that you can download or stream from your desktop. I've been doing this show since 2005, and I've interviewed just about all of the great authors like Michael and other people who have shared their expertise in their books. If there's a guest that you'd like for me to have, please send me a message, info@IndieBusinessRadio.com. I love to hear from you, and I invite you to check out all the shows there. I've just finished uploading all my 2009 archives. So when you go to IndieBusinessRadio.com, just click on the link for 2009 archives and have at it. It's a great place to go for your 20 minutes of learning every day. Thank you so much for joining. I'm Donna Maria. I'll see you next week. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.